shalt not make me kill. Thou shalt not make me hate. Thou shalt not make me
You're listening to WPKN 89.5 FM, Bridgeport, Connecticut, WPKM 88.7 FM, Montauk, New York, and on the internet at www.wpkn.org. I'm John Laser, temporarily filling in at this stage. Up next, Scott Harris. Please stay tuned. And first, we're going to hear, I think, from Doug Eccles and what's going on in Mystic.
Oh, here we go.
Avast, mateys. Hi, Doug Eccles here, host of WPKN's broadcast from Miss Seaport's 30th Annual Seaport Music Festival. Ha-ha! Mystic Seaport and I are proud to invite you to one of the world's premier sea music events. More than 5,000 people gather each year to hear an international group of performers carry on the musical traditions of this golden age of sail. This four-day sea music festival launches on Thursday evening, June 11th, with the 40-member New Bedford Shanty Chorus, and continues with over 40 more musicians performing throughout the festival. WPKN is proud to be partnered again with the Mystic Seaport Museum, broadcasting the evening concerts from 7 to 10 on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights. That's June 11th, 12th, and 13th. The festival offers an expanded Music of the Sea Symposium on Friday at the U.S. Coast Guard Academy, free to the public. Saturday and Sunday are filled with numerous stages and workshops all day long. For more information and tickets, go online to that internet thing there, that mysticseaport.com. WPKN is offering a drawing for Mystic Seaport Music Festival Day Passes during the Summers of Love Marathon on WPKN starting June 6th. Tune in and win some booty.
I went to a dance one night at Fox Harbor. There were plenty of girls there, as nice as you'd wish. There was one young man, a charm.
You're tuned to WPKN in Bridgeport at 89.5 FM and WPKM in Montauk, New York at 88.7 FM. We invite you to stay tuned next for Counterpoint.
That's great. It starts with an earthquake, birds and snakes and airplane. Lenny Bruce is not afraid. I am a hurricane. Listen to yourself. Turn world to its own needs. Dummy, serve your own needs. Beat it up and not speak. Grunt, no strength. The fury's breathing down your
Good evening and welcome to Counterpoint. My name is Scott Harris here Mondays between 8 and 10. I'm glad you could stop in this evening on this very beautiful June Monday after so much rain. And this station now in the midst of its 8-day fun drive, which is a real blessing in terms of the brevity of it and the change in expectations. In other words, we are doing so much better with this fun drive. I think the idea that we have a shortened drive is contributing to a lot of energy. And I thank you all for your contributions over this past weekend. The drive started on Saturday, and we're going to be continuing on in a little bit. But we have some programming to bring you first related to the fundraising tonight. And I'll also just run down what's on the program this evening. The schedule will be we're going to be taking a listen to an interview we did a few weeks back with Matthew Rothschild. He's the editor of the Progressive magazine. And we talked about a brand new book, which has some of the highlights of the 100 years that the Progressive has been publishing in this country, with great luminaries in the progressive field of politics and arts in these pages. And we run through some of these highlights with Matthew on the phone. And we're going to hear a bit of that, and then we're going to be asking you for your contribution to the station in exchange for our thank you gift of the book, this great book, Democracy in Print, the best of the Progressive magazine, and a CD of the interview, the entire interview that you'll hear part of tonight, as well as a one-year subscription to the Progressive magazine. So these are all gifts and thank yous for your contributions that you'll be making this evening. But we'll have some more details about that in a few moments. But right now, let's hear a bit of the Matthew Rothschild interview we did. And a quick note before we start that up. Later tonight, we're going to get a chance to speak with Kevin Zeese, Executive Director of Voters for Peace, and part of a coalition made up of 200 groups around the country that have filed formal complaints targeting 12 Bush administration attorneys for disciplinary action and disbarment for their involvement in authorizing torture of U.S.-held detainees. We'll also be speaking with Sam Husseini of the Institute for Public Accuracy. We're going to be talking about Barack Obama's historic speech to the Muslim world last week. And that's all coming tonight after we take care of our fundraising, which should be fun. So do stay tuned. Right now, we're going to go to right now to Matthew Rothschild, and we'll be back in a moment to talk more about the drive and the premiums we're offering tonight. Stay with us. I'm very honored right now to introduce to you Matthew Rothschild, editor of the Progressive magazine since 1994 and host of Progressive Radio, a weekly program syndicated nationally. He's author of Have You Have No Rights, Stories of America in an Age of Repression. Matthew has helped put together this wonderful new book commemorating the Progressive magazine 100th anniversary. It's titled Democracy in Print, the Best of the Progressive magazine, 1909. To 2009, featuring an incredible writers from these last 100 years: Jane Addams, Hanan Ashrawi, James Baldwin, Philip Berrigan, the Dalai Lama, John Kenneth Galbraith, Edward Galeano, Ralph Nader, Huey P. Long, Martin Luther King Jr., and on and on and on. I.F. Stone, Patti Smith. I could go on and on, but we will go on and on with you, Matthew. Thanks so much for being here with us tonight.
Hey, Scott, it's my pleasure. It's nice to be back on.
Yeah, and first of all, I want to ask you to describe to our listeners a wonderful celebration of the Progressive magazine 100th anniversary that you held in Madison back earlier this month.
Yeah, it was great on May 1st and 2nd here to have a celebration and a bash. Actually, on April 30th, we had a benefit concert with Ani DeFranco and the Indigo Girls and Dar Williams, and that was a lot of fun. And then for the conference itself, Howard Zinn was here, Kath Apollett was there, Terry Tempest Williams, the great essayist, environmentalist, was there. Dolores Huerta, that was a real treat for me, one of the founders with Cesar Chavez, the United Farm Workers, came, and she's just a living legend. So, and she was terrific. I mean, the amazing thing about everyone who was there, including Robert Redford, is that for all their celebrity, they were really down to earth, and they came at no honorarium charge to us, and they were just there not only to salute the Progressive magazine, but to salute the Progressive movement and the gains we've made in the last 100 years, and to salute the independent media for still, you know, being alive and kicking. Actually, I think the alternative media, along with radio, like this show, Scott, has never been stronger. We got Amy Goodman, we've got Air America, Rachel Maddow. I mean, you know, there's a lot more out there, including the internet, than there has been before. But the event was just terrific. We had a day of sessions of panels. Naomi Klein was here, so she was on a panel about the empire with me and Stephen Zunis, and then we had other panel topics. And then on Saturday, it was one speaker after another. Jim Hightower, Dennis Kucinich, Jesse Jackson were some of the people who were here for the conference. So I think anyone who attended got a sense of exhilaration at not only all the people who were here, but just at gathering together and celebrating, which we don't do enough on the progressive side.
You know what struck me at seeing this this new book, Democracy in Print, was the, you know, the rich history of the progressive movement in this country, the left in the United States, that has made so much history. But the theme of it is, you ask anybody on the street, any school kid, about a lot of these historical movements that were so successful in creating the eight-hour day, the labor movement, the civil rights movement, the vote for women. I mean, you can go on and on here, but a lot of people don't know the people who made all that possible, the movement.
Progressivism is an American political tradition that you can, you know, trace all the way back probably to the founding fathers, to Jefferson and to Paine and certainly to Lincoln and to Mark Twain, and then the actual progressives fighting Bob La Follette and on. And, you know, to the extent that we're a better country today than we were 100 years ago, it's because of progressives, it's because of activists, sometimes because of socialists, because of labor union activists. I mean, 100 years ago, women didn't have the right to vote. 100 years ago, blacks were being hanged all over the South. 100 years ago, child labor was the law of the land. 100 years ago, no environmental protection. 100 years ago, there was no minimum unemployment insurance, no workers' comp. There was no paid overtime. I mean, there was no protection of occupational safety and health. There was no Social Security. There was no Medicare, no Medicaid. So, you know, a lot of the things that we take for granted today were brought to us by the progressive movement and by the labor movement. And at the time that they were advocated, these people were called all sorts of names. They were ridiculed. They were red-baited. Sometimes they were jailed. And yet we've accomplished a lot.
The founder of the Progressive magazine, Senator Robert M. La Follette, is unknown to many Americans, but certainly he stands out as one of the progressive activists that was so important in American history. Tell us a little bit about Robert La Follette and his role in founding your magazine.
Yeah, he's pretty unknown outside of Wisconsin. Here in Wisconsin, he's a legend. Every school child is taught about him. There are schools named after him and roads named after him. Robert La Follette, fighting Bob La Follette, as he's still called here, was a governor of Wisconsin and then a senator for many years, and he was one of the leaders of the progressive movement along with Teddy Roosevelt that everyone knows about. But Teddy Roosevelt was different than Bob La Follette. Teddy Roosevelt was a progressive, but he was an imperialist progressive, whereas Fighting Bob La Follette was a progressive, but he was explicitly anti-imperialist like Mark Twain. And so La Follette opposed Woodrow Wilson meddling in Mexico during the early 19-teens. He opposed Woodrow Wilson's entry into World War One, and for that he was almost expelled from the Senate. He was called a traitor. He was hanged in effigy. A judge said he wanted to try him for treason and then be the guy who pulled the trigger on the firing squad against him. So there was all this vile hatred of Fighting Bob La Follette. So he was opposed to U.S. intervention, and he was explicitly and adamantly anti-corporate. Those were probably his two biggest issues. And he called corporate power the central issue of the day, whether we were going to be governed by corporations or whether we were going to be governed by people, whether democracy would win or whether plutocracy would win. So that is a fight that we're still fighting today.
How has the progressive survived 100 years? That's a landmark in any organization in this world. How did it happen, especially given the crisis in U.S. journalism, U.S. publications these days?
Well, we've survived for only one reason. We've survived because of the generosity of our subscribers. Actually, in 1910, Robert La Follette was passing the hat among subscribers, begging people shamelessly for contributions over and above the price of the subscription just to keep this magazine of dissent going. And that's how we've done it ever since. Actually, in 1947, the Progressive stopped publishing for a couple years, for a couple months, and the headline was "The End of the Progressive." But the readers came to the rescue by sending in contributions, small and medium-sized contributions by the thousands, and so the magazine was able to resume, and we've been begging and borrowing ever since. We don't steal, but, I'll get on the phone and I'll call people up for $50 or $100 contributions. I must make 1,000 of those calls a year. And we send out letters all the time asking people for money. It's not mail fraud. We really need the money. We don't have the money. And if people didn't respond, we'd be out of business in a hurry. So that's how we've done it. It's been hand-to-mouth, paycheck, payroll, paycheck to payroll, paycheck. And that's how I imagine it will continue. As far as the crisis in journalism today, which is a kind of an interesting and separate question, Scott, I think magazines are better situated than newspapers for sure to survive. I think newspapers are going to die. We're seeing their corpses all over the sidewalk right now. It used to be they'd say you could wrap a fish in yesterday's newspaper. Well, you can wrap a fish in today's newspaper because the time it lands on your stoop, it's already old. People have already found out what the news was by getting it on the internet or to some extent on TV, but especially on the internet, you can find out all the stuff before the newspaper lands. So it's old news upon arrival, so it's dead upon arrival. As far as magazines go, though, unless you're like Newsweek, which is an anachronism already, the name of the magazine is obsolete because who wants to wait 6.5 days to figure out what the news of the week is when you can find it out instantaneously on the web? But if a magazine like the Progressive, a monthly, that looks at the news from a higher altitude and doesn't look at, what happened yesterday, what Barack Obama said the day before, or this contretemps or another, but looks at issues and trends and investigative reporting that people don't have and brings to the pages of the Progressive or whatever magazine it is, new voices, interesting columnists that aren't thrown up for free on the web, then there is more of a reason for being. On top of that, I still think there's an aesthetic experience in reading a book or a magazine, and I actually think magazines are going to become more like books, those that survive. And that is, there's a opening, there's a welcoming, then there are little appetizers, a main meal, and there's some beauty or some art. We have original political poetry every month in the Progressive. We have original political humor in the Progressive from Will Durst or Kate Clinton every month. And then there's a farewell. We have Jim Hightower saying goodbye every month. And so that, to me, gives you kind of a holistic, symmetrical, pleasing experience reading it, as opposed to the way we're consuming news on the internet right now. It's one piece of news after another. It's conveyor belt style. You're kind of like Lucy in the Chocolate Factory. You're shoving one piece of chocolate in your mouth after another, one piece of news after another, and you can't tell which one's more important, and then you're on to the next, and it's kind of crazy-making.
I wondered if you would select something to summarize for us from the book. Robert M. La Follette and others addressed many issues that, from 100 years ago or nearly 100 years ago that we're dealing with in many similar ways right now today. One of those I know was health care. Back in 1917, there was an article written by Irwin Fisher where he talked about the need for universal health care. 1917. We're still fighting that damn battle. It's amazing.
I said at the beginning, we've accomplished a lot. We've also not accomplished a lot. And some of the things we haven't accomplished, some of those things are depressing, like universal health care. Jane Addams in 1909 was talking in the pages of the Progressive about the need for universal health care, and here we are without it. In like 1910, we were talking about the need for full public financing of elections, and we haven't gotten that yet. So, it's a real problem here that we haven't been able to make the gains that are necessary, and they're popular things. The people want universal health care. The people want full public financing of elections, and yet the corporations are getting in the way. That is the obstacle here, this corporate power that La Follette warned us about. And, we had this article, The Need for Health Insurance for All Americans, January 1917. It is the compelling hand of the law that society secures liberation from the evils of crime, vice, ignorance, accidents, unemployment, invalidity, and disease. That was Irving Fisher. And La Follette himself, you know, he talked about this concept that the people who are poor are just kind of going to be always with us, or they're there because it's God's purposes, and he was disputing that. I mean, this is him from 1909. Here is the basis of the struggle in America. There are those high in power and strong in the intellect, many of them, who don't believe that the evils we suffer come from social maladjustments. They think the poor man or the criminal or the ignorant or the weak, the architect of his own misfortune. They can thread the slum or inspect the tenement with a sincere belief that these people are so situated by reason of inevitable evils or of their own fault or failure, and not because of misdirected social forces which are capable of correction by an aroused democracy. That was La Follette, always trying to arouse the democracy. And, you know, I got more respect for him the more I read, because, first of all, he was tremendously courageous. And secondly, he was a very strong and beautiful and powerful writer. He didn't use flowery language. He wrote in very simple, plain English. And he was a powerhouse. So was his wife, Belcase La Follette, who was a leading suffragist in the upper Midwest here. And she'd go around on whistle stop tours with Jane Addams in the back of trains from one town after another, from Chicago to Minneapolis to Madison and all over, giving speeches for women's suffrage. And to read the first 11 years of the Progressive, when it was a suffragist magazine, from 1909 till women got the vote in 1920, was so exciting, because you could see the momentum build. You could see the right-wing arguments be totally refuted. And then you could almost feel the exultation upon achieving that landmark event. So that was fun. And part of that fun was to discover in 1912, as I did when I opened the bound volumes, a little piece by Carl Sandburg, the Chicago poet, who was writing a feminist piece. He was writing something called My Baby Girl. This was an article that he wrote, an essay, that came to the Progressive after he and his wife had their daughter, and he was so excited about having his daughter, but within 24 hours, his friends would come up to him and say, "Carl, too bad it's a girl." One friend after another said it, and finally he wrote this essay saying, "I'm proud I have a baby girl. I'm delighted with it, with the girl. I'm appalled at the prejudice that at birth is greeting her." And he prophesized that his baby girl would at some point not only have the right to vote, this was 1912, but that she would see women elected to Congress. And that was that all came true. I'm sure when he wrote it, a lot of his friends who were saying, "Too bad it's a girl," were thinking he was crazy.
Well, that's a great story, Carl Sandburg, in the pages of the
And we're going to just run in right here to mention that WPKN is in the midst of its fund drive. And what you're listening to is an interview with Matthew Rothschild. It was recorded a few weeks back on the occasion of the 100th anniversary of the Progressive magazine. 100 years it's been in print. And WPKN is taking a little time out this week to raise funds so we can remain here on these airwaves. And I'm here with John Laser and Walter Wagner, and Denise Manzari is also on the phone. And what we're going to do right now is ask for your contribution to this listener-supported station. And in exchange for your contributions tonight, among the gifts that we're going to be offering as thank yous is a combination package related to what you just heard about. Democracy in Print is the name of the book that has hundreds of articles and poems and all kinds of material from the one century of the pages of the Progressive magazine. The book, along with this interview you heard, a CD audio version of this interview, and the third element of this package is the one-year subscription to the Progressive magazine coming to your mailbox every month. And so these three things all together, the Progressive package here on WPKN, we're offering to you for a $75 or more contribution that you phone into us tonight. And the phone number is 203-384-9756. 203-384-9756. And we hope you'll be able to help us out right now with a contribution. And I think Denise is on the air with us. Denise, are you here? Oh, there you are. I hear you.
Scott?
Yes.
Okay, so now you hear me.
Now I hear you.
Okay.
I think you had me off before.
Right. And I think I'm switching back and forth to Denise because I have her on the wrong slider here. But I'm going to go back to Denise and just ask her to help
out. Well, she's much more interesting than I am.
Well, we'll get to you in a minute.
That's kind of all right.
Thanks, John. But our phone number here is 203-384-9756. Pledge because you love PKN. Pledge because you can expect the unexpected here. And pledge because you want to continue this 40-year-plus experiment in non-commercial radio, listener-supported radio. Denise, you're there, right?
Yes, I am.
Now you're there. Okay. And I would just ask you to make a statement here as the outgoing program director here. What's special about this station that you believe deserves our listener support tonight?
Well, you know, although people have many choices these days, the idea of having a live person in the studio, especially able to program what they think is important, whether it's spoken word or music, is getting to be more and more unique. I mean, it was always unique, and it's becoming more precious and more important as time goes by. Because no matter what you download or no matter where you go, if you want to go to XM Sirius or whatever you want to do, these are all pre-programmed situations. A lot of commercial radio stations are the same as well. And so to have something like WPKN is very, very critical in this time. So it would be very important for people to, you know, support WPKN by calling 203-384-9756 and show us your support in the form of a pledge, because nothing without, you know, the cash flow. Unfortunately, whether it's a household or a radio station or anything at all. So, you know, you need the money to do that. We don't take government money, so we have the listeners that give us their money and keep the station going, and that's also very unique because we don't have a lot big corporate donations as well. We do have some matching funds from where people work, from their places of business, employment, but it's basically just a grassroots, ground-up kind of organization. And, you know, it's been around for 46 years, 1963. We'd like to see it around for another 46, but it's not going to be around unless we get the funds to keep it running. 203-384-9756. The Progressive, as Scott mentioned, has reached its 100th anniversary from 1909 to 2009. You just heard an interview with Matthew Rothschild, who is the editor of the Progressive, and is really traveling all over the country and perhaps the world, talks and promoting the Progressive for the next 100 years to come, because it's a very important organization as well. And thereby, we're all interconnected with these critical issues and situations that need to be addressed that you don't really hear, and especially in this kind of intricacy in other areas. You know, you'll hear 30-second, 15-second, 5-second sound bites, but nothing in-depth and analytical. So WPKN is a place where you can hear that, and I think most people would appreciate that. 03-384-9756 is the number to call.
And the package again is Democracy in Print, the best of the Progressive magazine, 1909 to 2009. And you got just a quick kind of sliver of some flavors of what is being said of this magazine for all these 100 years. And it covers the gamut of things from women's rights, the women winning the vote back in the early part of the century, as well as the civil rights struggle, the movement against the war in Vietnam. But even going back to the Progressive era, of which Senator Robert M. La Follette, the founder of this magazine, is from, he talks all about issues like Social Security and health care and the robber barons and the issues of wealth and poverty in this country that have not been fully debated or resolved, not even near it. And it's amazing to read, again, the discussion of health care and the need for universal health care across the globe
with the United States being the only country, even way back then, in some of the early parts of this century, of the previous century, I should say, in the 1900s, with many nations moving in that direction, but not the United States. And we're still not there. Same debate. But it's fascinating to read some of these issues from the perspective of 50, 70, 85, 95 years ago. So this is a great resource as someone who's interested in politics, whether you're an activist or an armchair activist. This is something that is especially good for students, people who are just growing up, who maybe have an interest in politics or progressive politics or don't know anything about progressive politics in the age of Bush and the kids who grew up on that kind of thing. Yeah, we have a new day in this country with Barack Obama, but some of the same things continue under the new administration as with the old. And progressive principles are things to be studied, and we need to know our history here. And this station provides and has provided for decades now a soapbox, really, for people who don't make it into the other forms of media in this country, whether it's newspapers, magazines, television, or the radio stations. Radio, by the way, predominantly dominated by the right wing, the extreme crazy right wing. But that's another story. The issue here is we've got a wonderful platform at this station to bring you voices you don't hear otherwise. And that's what we're proud of. That's what we hope you will support tonight with a phone call to us at 203-384-9756. This station has a real proud heritage when it comes to bringing the voices of the voiceless to a larger audience here at in our listening area here in Connecticut and now Long Island, and of course through the internet worldwide. Call us right now and pledge what you can at 203-384-9756. I'll read some passages about this book, Democracy in Print, and go through exactly what we're offering again in some detail. But I thought I'd check in with John Laser here to see where things are at. John?
Yes, Scott. We just got our first call, and Walter
good
is
sign.
Yes, Walter's now occupied on phone number one. If you call next, you'll get to talk to our resident jazz expert, Phil Bowler. And should a third person call, I'll actually answer the phone. So 203-384-9756. Call and get your progressive package that Scott is offering this evening. And, you know, if you're interested in some other things, we have that as well. We have the mug for $35, which is back this pledge period, which has been missing for a while. We have a number of CDs, including the Peter Boshin CDs, the Summer of Love CDs, 67, 68. And 69, you can get all three of those for a pledge of $100 or an individual one for $50. But please call 203-384-9756. Phil's looking pretty lonely back here.
203-384-9756. And I'm here with Denise Bonzari, WPKM programmer for many, many years. Recently ended her tenure as program director here at the station. And we're asking for your contribution to keep the station going. So we got our first call, and that's a milestone here. We're happy we broke the ice with that. But a $75 contribution will get you this Democracy in Print, the best of the Progressive magazine, which includes writings of Jane Addams, Hanan Ashrawi, James Baldwin, Philip Berrigan, Hugo Black, Helen Caldicott, George Carlin, the wonderful late comedian George Carlin, Noam Chomsky, Chuck D., the Dalai Lama, Elwidge Danticat, Mahmoud Darwish, and William O. Douglas, Rita Dove, Theodore Dreiser, Barbara Ehrenreich, Martin Espada, the poet, Senator Russ Feingold, John Kenneth Galbraith, Eduardo Galeano, who's been in the news with the book The Open Veins of Latin America, given as a gift to Barack Obama. You might want to see his writings here. Allen Ginsberg, Sam Hamill, Jim Hightower, Molly Ivins, June Jordan, Murray Kempton, Martin Luther King Jr., Huey P. Long, Bill Moyers, Ralph Nader. I'm just going down the list of the hundreds of artists and writers and political activists and academics and journalists who've written in the pages of the Progressive. And, again, they have been sort of a brother or sister to this station in that we've featured the radio shows, the Progressive magazine over the years. Irwin Knoll used to be a frequent guest here on my show and other shows when he was alive and editor of the Progressive magazine.
and we feel kinship with the Progressive magazine. And what's interesting is Progressive just celebrated its 100th year anniversary. WPKM, believe it or not, is approaching our extreme middle age here at 50 years old. Just a few years down the road, we're going to be celebrating our 50th anniversary. And we can make it to that 50th anniversary with your calls tonight. Make a call and make a pledge, whatever amount you can afford. But maybe you want a $75 Progressive package. We send you the thank you gift of the book, Democracy in Print, as well as the audio CD of the interview talking about the celebration of the Progressive's 100th year, as well as a one-year subscription to the Progressive Magazine. And their subscription and our asking for your contribution is all part of the same thing. We're trying to remove the obstacles, the censorship, the self-censorship, the overt censorship, the very subtle forms of self-censorship that predominate in American journalism today, where you don't get a lot of points of view that you you would hear on these airwaves in the mainstream. And the debate on single-payer health care right now today is certainly such an example. We do a lot to cover that, and unfortunately you don't hear a lot of discussion in many other venues. 203-384-9756, that's the phone number to call. Make a pledge, call us, and help us out. We're going to be asking for your contributions right up till 9 p.m. We've got some other interviews scheduled, but we really do need to move and shake some trees here for the mullah to keep this place going. 203-384-9756. It's a wonderful gift, especially for a student, as I said earlier. This really covers the gamut of the last 100 years of the progressive movement in this country, whether it's the peace movement around World War One, the issues of human rights and civil rights and gender equality, the fight over reproductive rights, the Vietnam War, the Iraq Wars, plural, the fight around nuclear power. I was just reading something in here about the Clamshell Alliance, where I'd gone to several of the civil disobedience actions up in New Hampshire. The Clamshell Alliance led massive civil disobedience against the opening of a nuclear power plant there in southern New Hampshire, and some incredible adventures, I guess you'd say, with police and tear gas and people being rounded up in the swamps, right on the coastal swamps of Seabrook, New Hampshire. Anyway, there's an article here about that issue from Harvey Wasserman, who's a real leading light on energy issues and nuclear power and even the voting rights in Ohio. So this is a couple of things I was looking at as well on capital punishment. There's a whole section on the movement against capital punishment from back in 1912, Belle Case La Follette, relative of the founder of this magazine, Robert M. La Follette. Also, Senator John Blaine, from August 1927, wrote his opposition to the death penalty. This has just come up for a vote in the state legislature here, and it looks like the legislators will not be able to override a veto banning the death penalty here in Connecticut over Governor Jody Rell's objection. But, again, this is living history. What you're reading in this book is not something stale and yellowed from the past. This contributes to a better understanding of what came before us and what may lie ahead. So Democracy in Print, the book all about 100 years of progressive thought in this country, the audio interview with Matthew Rothschild, the magazine's current editor, as well as you get the subscription, the 12-month subscription to the Progressive magazine for a contribution of $75 or more. Call us, please, now. We are going to other interviews at 9, but we'd like to hear from as many of our listeners who listen to this show or maybe tuning in for the first time. Make a call, make a pledge, and help us out. 203-384-9756. Denise, maybe you want to chime in any thoughts you have right now to stir the cauldron.
I couldn't hear everything that you were saying because of the connection was, I don't know what's going on, and I can't hear John Laser at all, but for the first 20 years, the Progressive was called La Follette's Weekly. I don't know if you mentioned that, which I think is interesting, and it wasn't until almost 1930 that he changed it to the Progressive. But it didn't change, you know, the views and mission of the Progressive, and that was, as Robert La Follette stated, to be a magazine of progress, social, intellectual, and institutional, winning back for the people the complete power over government, whether it be national, state, or municipal, which at that time, 100 years ago, he says, which has been lost to them. So it's 100 years later, and that's a magazine and an organization that continues because of public support. WPKN is an institution that's 46 years old. We'd like to make it to the anniversary, the 100th anniversary, just like the Progressive. We can't do it without you. So 203-384-9756 is the number.
Saying amazingly.
Interesting package. What?
I was just saying, amazingly, we're approaching our 50th anniversary, as you just said. So we're hoping to make it to our 50th. Then we'll worry about the 100th, right?
Right. Yeah, and just hoping for the best, I guess. I just lost my train of thought here. 203-384-9756 is the number to call.
That's what you were going to say.
That's what I was going to say. it's kind of weird sometimes being on the phone and doing this. I heard John Laser state that we did get one phone call a little while
so far.
I
got
more since then.
I got to check back with him, but I'm hoping we're piling them up back there. But I have you on the same potentiometer here, or pot, as we like to say,
issue.
And that's because I got something going on right after this segment. We're going to another interview where I need to get onto the computer, but it's a longer story. But 203-384-9756 is the number. Let me check it with John right now, Denise. Let's hear what is happening back in our telling room. John, can you tell us what's happening?
Yes, we have to thank John from Wallingford, who called in with a pledge.
Thank you so much for that call.
And we're getting our second call of the evening, and we're now occupying Walter again. And we do have Phil Bowler waiting on line number two for you, and I'll gladly pick up on line number three.
Let's get everybody working back there. And
it is not going as good as we would hope for right now.
Well,
Scott,
we can turn that around right now with a phone call right to this number, 203-384-9756.
Yes,
we have a number of excellent premiums in addition to the Progressive package.
Yep.
And John or Walter or Phil would be happy to tell you about it. We've got Peter Beauchamp, the Shortcut through 1967, 68, 69, all about the politics and the music and the culture of those crucial years in our history, as well as this Progressive package and coffee mugs and all those kind of things. But do call. The bottom line here is that we'd like to have your support for this here radio station so we can remain on the air. Your contribution is critical to our survival. We don't take funds from corporations or the government, so you are all that stands between us and the wolves at the door. 203-384-9756. So, John, we'll check back in a couple of moments here, and hopefully we'll get some progress here on our Progressive package.
Well, I know Walter's actively engaged as we're speaking.
That's good to hear.
Phil is sitting back here dejected still because no one's talked to Phil yet.
That's not good. We're going to have to get a call to Phil.
Please call Phil, and you can call me too if you wish. But Phil has to get occupied before I do.
All right. Well, let's give that number 203-384-9756, 203-384-9756. And Denise, we had Matthew Rothschild talking a bit about the history and Robert M. La Follette, the senator who started the magazine under his own name. And now it is a 100-year institution that brings progressive voices in print as well as on the radio show they've done over the years. And the subscription, the book, and the audio interview are all yours for a pledge of $75 or more. And I can just read a summary of the book, too, if you're just tuning in a little late and hearing this for the first time. The book we're talking about is Democracy in Print, The Best of the Progressive Magazine, 1909 to 2009. And here's a quick summary of it. Democracy in Print captures many of the most influential voices from a century of United States history who've spoken out on the struggle to make real the promise of democracy for all Americans, railed against abuses of corporate power, renounced American empire, championed environmental causes, opposed war, and waged peace. It chronicles voices of the women's rights movement, the civil rights movement, the labor movement, and the gay rights movement. And on every page, it declares the importance of an independent media by culling the best of the program over the last 100 years. Readers will discover the vision of the magazine's founder,
Robert Fighting Bob La Follette and his suffragist wife, Belle Case La Follette. They'll find historic gems from the likes of Jane Addams, Carl Sandburg, Huey P. Long, and John Kenneth Galbraith, and profound essays by Theodore Dreiser, Barbara Ehrenreich, Noam Chomsky, Upton Sinclair, Honorati Roy, James Baldwin, Eldridge Danticat, and Edward Said. The collection is Leaven with Humor from Kate Clinton, Will Durst, Michael Feldman, and Molly Ivins, and graced by poems from such writers as Mahmoud Darwish, Rita Dove, Martin Espada, Maxine Kuman, Adrian Rich, and Sandra Cisneros. Fascinating interviews bring readers into conversation with prominent cultural figures, including Chuck D., the Dalai Lama, Allen Ginsberg, Amy Goodman, Harold Pinter, Patti Smith, Susan Sarandon, and Yevgeny Yevtushenko. Eminently browsable, the book is for everyone concerned with American democracy, the global community, and the perils of the planet, with contributions by actors and Supreme Court justices, comedians, and Nobel Prize winners. Democracy in Print offers all readers nourishing food for thought, and it is a fascinating book. Again, you look at the issues we're fighting about today, right now, in 2009, and you flip through the pages of this, and you are just amazed. You know, as I said, whether it's about reproductive rights or civil rights or the fight for universal health care or capital punishment or war and peace or corporate plutocracy in the fight against poverty. All these issues, of course, have been with humanity for forever. And, there have been a lot of progressive activists that came long before us who fought these battles, won some, lost some, and some of those they've lost we're still fighting today, like for universal health care. And I'm gonna beat that one because that's critical, and this is a year it may even happen. But yeah, you're aware of that. What's that? No, it won't.
No, it won't.
Well, you got to have a little optimism there. 203-384-9756. So whether you're an optimist, pessimist, or a realist, call us up and pledge what you can. This station needs realists like you because realists know it takes active listener action to keep an independent media institution like WPKN alive and on the air. So your activism right now, you're taking action right now by calling us and pledging whatever you can. And maybe if you can afford it, take away the $75 package that we're offering, the Progressive Magazine, one-year subscription, the book, Democracy in Print, that we've been talking about, and the audio interview with Matthew Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive. 203-384-9756. That's the number to call. And Denise is a realist, I think. Right,
well,
Denise?
And that, you know, at that moment of that remark, you know, one might call me a pessimist. But so given that dual title, one must realize that even though I really don't think it may happen this year, if people are not vigilant and informed about the issue, it'll never happen at all. So publications like the Progressive, radio stations like WPKN are crucially important to keeping you informed and up to date on what's going on in detail with these issues, to make you an informed person and an educated person to be able to go to these rallies or vote with complete knowledge of what's going on and to fight for the issue at hand, because you're not going to hear it, you know, in a lot of other venues, as Scott mentioned earlier, you know, through the mainstream corporate media. You're not going to get the in-depth discussion and analysis of these types of issues that you get from Progressive and WPKN. So 203-384-9756 is the number to call. We really do need to hear from you now. Give us your pledge. You, as is stated oftentimes, you're not paying that right now. You will be receiving an envelope in the mail to which you can send it at your ability. But the commitment and the pledge needs to happen now. We are going to do this for 8 days. We started on Saturday, so this is the third day. It runs until Saturday, this Saturday, in the evening. So it, you know, gives you five more days in which to call. But we're condensing it. This is a new format. We are doing it in 8 day, obviously, segments, if you will, several times during the year to meet our budget, because without meeting our budget, we don't get to pay the bills. Without paying the bills, and WPKN does not remain the institution that people rely on a daily basis by listening to it, you know, on their radio, having it already preset on their dial, perhaps. Even if they go back and forth throughout the day, it's something they can count on 24/7, 99% of the time, save for a couple of unforeseen circumstances. But, you know, we are here, and it's all run predominantly by volunteers. We have two paid staff people, a full-time station manager, who now is Mr. Peter Beauchan, as many of you know. He just joined us, so he is our new station manager, and we have a halftime assistant as well. We really have several positions on the board that require an awful lot of work and time and energy, and technically really should be paying positions. We just don't have that right now. We're just able to do what we can with one and a half salaries, and the rest are volunteers, and a lot of people put in a lot of time behind the scenes that you don't really hear to keep the station going. So if you call 203-384-9756 and show your support for all of them, it will keep WPKN here for you in the morning. So please do give us a call. 203-384-9756. Monday nights is Scott Harris with Counterpoint. We have other public affairs programs as well on Sunday night. We recount an excellent program produced by Ken McDermott Rowe. He's a great addition to WPKN as well. We have our Long Island contingency with Tony Ernst and Henry Letcher and Hazel Kahn as well. Kevin Ross is our Long Island coordinator. They work very hard as well. Thursday, typically on the first and fourth Thursdays, is their program. East End News and Tidings by Hazel Kahn. So these are half-hour programs, pre-recorded. Half-hour goes by pretty fast, but, you know, a lot of hours are put in for a one-half-hour broadcast. It takes a lot of people and a lot of hours to produce that. 203-384-9756. And this is all in addition to the music that you hear at WPKN. Very unexpected, some of it eclectic, some people specializing in particular genres, and they're knowledgeable about those genres as well. It makes it all for a very interesting experience when you turn the dial to 89.5. We know that in times, economic times like this, you know, so-called luxuries take the first hit. We don't consider PKN a luxury, but we consider it a necessity. So it's a necessity for us, and we hope it's a necessity for you. 203-384-9756.
I'm going to check in with John Laser and Walter and Phil and see what
relay,
we got.
If you can relay to me perhaps what he's saying, because I cannot hear one word he's saying.
Yeah, it's due to my operator
okay.
error here.
No,
we'll,
no, no.
But we'll go to him right now. John, what's happening? Anything good? Whoops.
Yeah, hold on. Sorry about that.
No problem.
No, I had to turn it down because I didn't know when you were going to cut back over to me.
Right.
We have to thank Frank and Roy Wayton for his generous donation. And unfortunately, that's the only person I have to thank at this point. But in the meantime, we've been occupying ourselves by reviewing album artwork, our album cover work. We've been chatting about Obama's pick for the Supreme Court. We've been chatting about real estate up in Maine. In other words, we really do need your help to occupy our time back here. 203-384-9756. And, you know, please, we need your help.
It would be good to have more calls come in because we've been at this about 45 minutes, an hour, including the preface to this show, which was the interview with Matthew Rothschild about the book we're offering as a thank you gift for your contribution to this radio station. So please give us a call right now at 203-384-9756. And again, you can take advantage of this three-element democracy in print book, the Progressive Magazine subscription, as well as the audio interview with with Matthew Rothschild. So we've only had a couple of calls so far, Denise, and we're trying in this last 7 minutes of this pledge period here to ramp it up really big, really quick. 203-384-9756. And it's time for you to call because, again, I think there was a sort of a mindset or a culture that, hey, these fund drives go on forever. You know, if I don't get it tonight, this particular premium item, it'll be offered 3 weeks down the road. Well, we've changed the format. So if you're sort of tuning in and maybe new to what's new here at PKN, the idea here is we're doing an 8-day fund drive. So this is the only Monday evening I'm going to be on here asking you for money for the next several months anyway. And we hope that you will avail yourself of these premium items if you're interested. And if you'd like to support this radio station, which we hope you will say yes to, call us now because that fund drive is going to be over this Saturday. So, yeah, anything that you would hope to donate by way of some money and some premiums you'd like to get for yourself, make sure you do it quick. This is a quick turnaround on this fund drive, and we're all happier for it and better off for it. But it only works if you call in this shortened time span. It's concentrated. It's a lot more focused than we have been in previous fund drives, and we think that's all for the good. But to make this work, again, you've got to pick up the phone and dial us at 203-384-9756 and make a pledge for this station, which for almost, you know, for 46 years now, actually 46 years going on 50, we want to be around. And we can only do that with your support, with your monetary support. These tough economic times certainly have made it difficult for everyone, including us. You know that better than I can tell you. But do make a pledge of whatever you can reasonably afford at this point to help the station get over this hump. 203-384-9756. And do it quick because we're going to be out of here in about 5 minutes. Although I know John Laser may be around a few more minutes after that 9 o'clock deadline we've got. But we've got some other interviews here, and it'd be wonderful to really push this a little more forward than we've been able to do in the last 45 minutes. 203-384-9756. Progressive politics, music of all types and varieties and genres have always been the sort of twins here at the station. I grew up listening to this station, and it helped me formulate a lot about how I saw the world growing up in the anti-Vietnam War era. And I know many of you are old-timers. You've been listening for that many years as well. And, you know, it's a real gem here, this station. And it will continue on for future generations and maybe different ways technically. We've got a lot of incredible possibilities in front of us in terms of getting this broadcast out via podcasts and the internet to who knows where, the Fiji Islands and beyond. But although the technology has changed, the core principles of the station have not changed. We bring you the voices and the music that are not heard elsewhere, and we're proud of that. And those are principles which don't come without a price, and the price is a little money ponied up every a couple of times a year by you, our listeners. That's what it takes, and we can go on another 50 years. Call us right now and break this little logjam we got at this last 5 minutes of tonight's Monday Fun Drive. Call us at 203-384-9756. And Denise, I'm going to actually ask you maybe to say one parting shot here before we move on to other things. But I will do that knowing that you will inspire a blizzard of calls.
Let it be on your head? No.
And if you don't?
I know. I myself have been part of WPKN since 1982 and a listener since 1973, thereabouts. And I agree with you that I had many magical moments listening to the radio, be it inspired by some musical selection I heard or, you know, a piece of information. And it was a very interesting radio, but we were supported by the University of Bridgeport back then. In 1989, that changed. We lost our funding, and it was either we had two options, either just close it down and call it a day and say goodbye, or, you know, pick ourselves up by our bootstraps, give it the old college try, as you will, if you will, and just try and raise the money ourselves. Well, lo and behold, we organized and got together and got on the air, and the listeners responded incredibly and came through to keep WPK on the air for another 20 years. It was 1989. 20 years later, we're still here, thanks to you, and we'd like to remain here, and it will only happen because of your support. Please call WPKN 203-384-9756. Pledge your support to WPKN's future. We really do need to hear from you. We are doing this in 8 days, as a concentrated fundraising all day long, as opposed to the segmented hour to 90 minutes per program, which really made it seem kind of endless as it dragged on for, you know, 6-7 weeks. So we're concentrating the hours, doing it in 8 days, mixing it up with music and interviews and various short programs, hoping that it's easier on everybody, and that you will call, pledge your support, and keep WPKN a viable institution for the future. 203-384-9756. Please do call us now.
Denise, thank you so much for being here tonight, your help with this and everything else you do at the station. And we'll hope that has rung somebody's chimes and ring our chimes here at the station. Make the call to 203-384-9756. A host of thank you premiums, gifts for you if you pledge certain amounts of money. And $75 will get you, again, this progressive package we've been talking about tonight, Democracy in Print, the book, the magazine, 1909 to 2009. In that package comes a 12-month subscription to the Progressive Magazine, as well as the audio CD of the interview with Matthew Rothschild, all talking about the 100th anniversary, what it means in the history of the Progressive Magazine, the fights yesterday, today, and tomorrow for justice, for peace and justice. So thank you, Denise. We'll be talking to you real soon, and appreciate your help tonight.
Okay.
Take care. Bye-bye. And we're going to just ask for one final check-in here with our friend John Laser and see what's cooking back in the tally room. John, anything happen in there? I'm hoping I'm connected with John. Oops. John Laser. Anyway. It's 1 minute past 9 p.m., and I should say that this is WPKN in Bridgeport at 89.5 FM and WPKM in Montauk at 88.7 FM. And, John, maybe you're on the phone. That would be a good thing. In fact, that's what I'm going to imagine. I'm going to imagine that the calls are coming in so fast and furious, the phone lines are smoking. So that's all right. That's my view, my dream, my delusion, whatever you want to call it, and I thank you all for those calls. And we did certainly get some calls, and I thank the listeners who pledged this past weekend, today, and have pledged tonight, and will pledge the rest of the week. This drive, I just want to remind you, ends this Saturday. We're doing it short and concentrated rather than the long, drawn-out ones, as Denise just said, and that will work. That will be productive for us, and we will garner the funds we need to stay on the air with your help. But remember, the mindset isn't 5 weeks, 6 weeks, 7 weeks. It's 8 days, and that's, again, all to the good with your participation. So I'm going to take a quick break here for an announcement, actually from John Laser, who's our technical director this year. And we're going to be talking in just a few minutes about Barack Obama's speech to the Muslim world broadcast last week. So stay tuned, and we'll be back here. This is Counterpoint. My name is Scott Harris. And again, thanks for all your calls. And if we have people to thank on the air, we'll do so in a little bit. But thanks again.
This is John Laser, and I am the new technical director here at WPKN. As you know, we are 100% listener-supported and run by volunteers. We are looking for some creative technical volunteers from the community. We need your help redesigning our website so that it reflects who we are and gives us a more contemporary look and feel. If you are an experienced web designer and can help out your favorite radio station, please contact me at jl@wpkn.net or call me at 203 878-0260 during normal business hours. WPKN also needs newer PCs and networking gear to run our day operations and our on-air broadcasts. Have you recently upgraded your computer systems or have late model PCs and or networking gear that you're not using? If so, please consider donating them to WPKN. You may be eligible for a tax deduction since we are a 501c3 organization. Please contact me, JL@WPKN.net, or call me at 203-878-0260 to arrange for pickup or drop-off instructions. Thank you for your support.
Well, thank you for that, John. And this is WPKM in Bridgeport, WPKM in Montauk. My name is Scott Harris. The program is Counterpoint. And right now, we'd like to make the transition from our fun drive here on this here listener-supported radio station to some analysis of an important speech given by President Barack Obama last week in Cairo, Egypt. A speech billed as an important statement about a new view of the world, or at least a new view of this particular president, on the relationship between our nation, the United States, and the Muslim world. And right now we are very happy to bring you Sam Husseini. He is the communications director with the Institute for Public Accuracy, whose articles have been widely published in the U.S. press. Sam formerly served as the media director for the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, and I'm proud to have known Sam for a bunch of years here. Appreciate you making time for us tonight, Sam.
Thank you, Scott.
Tell our listeners just a bit before we begin here about the Institute for Public Accuracy.
Sure. It's a multi-issue group. We try to get generally progressive voices, but always critical voices, academics, analysts, activists on different issues into different media outlets, hopefully in a timely fashion. People work at accuracy.org. We post everything that we distribute to media with occasional success of getting it to mainstream outlets as well as building up independent media.
Sam, did I call you the right number? It's breaking up a little bit. Is there another number I have that I should be calling you?
No, unfortunately, I'm not near a landline right now. I hope it's okay. It looks...
Yeah, okay. We'll make do with it. We'll make do. I've been plagued, as you know, with radio and cell phones. It's sometimes
corrupts
you.
Sorry.
No, this is good, though. I can hear you pretty good now. Sam, I guess I would like your overall reaction to Obama's speech, but let's just break for a second here and take a listen to just a couple of snippets from the speech itself, okay?
I'm a Christian, but my father came from a Kenyan family that includes Christians and Muslims. As a boy, I spent several years in Indonesia and heard the call of the azan at the break of dawn and at the fall of dusk. As a young man, I worked in Chicago communities where many found dignity and peace in their Muslim faith. The Holy Quran teaches that whoever kills an innocent is as if he has killed all mankind. Whoever saves a person, it is as if he has saved all mankind. I'm also proud to carry with me the goodwill of the American people and a greeting of peace from Muslim communities in my country. Assalamu alaikum. Israelis must acknowledge that just as Israel's right to exist cannot be denied, neither can Palestine's. The United States does not accept the legitimacy of continued Israeli settlements. Palestinians must abandon violence. Resistance through violence and killing is wrong, and it does not succeed. It is a sign neither of courage nor power to shoot rockets at sleeping children or to blow up old women on a bus. That's not how moral authority is claimed. That's how it is surrendered. Iraq was a war of choice that provoked strong differences in my country and around the world. In the middle of the Cold War, the United States played a role in the overthrow of a democratically elected Iranian government. I'm aware that there's still...
Sam, we're back here. Were you able to hear some of that?
Oops.
Sam, are you still there? For some reason, we lost Sam. Well, let's continue to listen to Barack Obama. We'll get Sam back on the line. The phones are playing havoc with us tonight, but we'll be okay. Stay with us.
History that cannot be denied. Around the world, the Jewish people were persecuted for centuries. And anti-Semitism in Europe culminated in an unprecedented Holocaust. Denying that fact is baseless, it is ignorant, and it is hateful. Threatening Israel with destruction or repeating vile stereotypes about Jews is deeply wrong. There are some who advocate for democracy only when they're out of power. Once in power, they are ruthless in suppressing the rights of others. You must maintain your power through consent, not coercion. You must respect the rights of minorities. 9/11 was an enormous trauma to our country. The fear and anger that it provoked was understandable. But in some cases, it led us to act contrary to our traditions and our ideals. I have unequivocally prohibited the use of torture by the United States, and I have ordered the prison at Guantanamo Bay closed by early next year.
Well, we're trying to reach Sam Husseini back on the phone right now and having a little difficulty, but I'm going to actually get to play some of the speech, and eventually we'll get Sam back on the line and be able to make this work. But do stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment after we get Sam on the line, and I'm hoping that we'll get some sort of new perspectives on what this speech may mean. As we take a look at some of what Barack Obama said last week.
The third source of tension is our shared interest in the rights and responsibilities of nations on nuclear weapons. This issue has been a source of tension between the United States and the Islamic Republic of Iran. For many years, Iran has defined itself in part by its opposition to my country. And there is, in fact, a tumultuous history between us. In the middle of the Cold War, the United States played a role in the overthrow of a democratically elected Iranian government. Since the Islamic Revolution, Iran has played a role in acts of hostage-taking and violence against U.S. troops and civilians. This history is well known. Rather than remain trapped in the past, I've made it clear to Iran's leaders and people that my country is prepared to move forward. The question now is not what Iran is against, but rather what future it wants to build. I recognize it will be hard to overcome decades of mistrust, but we will proceed with courage, rectitude, and resolve. There will be issues to discuss between our two countries, and we are willing to move forward without preconditions on the basis of mutual respect. But it is clear to all concerned that when it comes to nuclear weapons, we have reached a decisive point. This is not simply about America's interests. It's about preventing a nuclear arms race in the Middle East that could lead this region and the world down a hugely dangerous path. Now, I understand those who protest that some countries have weapons that others do not. No single nation should pick and choose which nation holds nuclear weapons. And that's why I strongly reaffirmed America's commitment to seek a world in which no nations hold nuclear weapons. And any nation, including Iran, should have the right to access peaceful nuclear power if it complies with its responsibilities under the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty. That commitment is at the core of the treaty, and it must be kept for all who fully abide by it. And I'm hopeful that all countries in the region can share in this goal.
Well, the magic of cell phones and telephones and all the progress, talking about progress, we've made over these many, many years in technology seem to have left us in lurch here. Sam Husseini was going to be with us to talk about this speech from Barack Obama, but we lost him. We had him there for a couple of minutes and then lost him on the cell phone. So there we are. But I thought it would be very interesting to hear some of your reactions as listeners to this show, week in, week out, about the particulars of Middle East politics, the United States' long-term relationship with Iran, the issue of nuclear weapons, and the many issues that have arisen since that horrendous day on September 11, 2001, where mostly Saudi Arabians flew planes into the World Trade Center, killing 3,000 people and a crashing plane into the Pentagon. One other plane headed to Washington was also crashed and killed the passengers on board, as we all know, in Pennsylvania. But I think there is certainly many years of bad blood, many mistakes by the previous Bush administration when it comes to U.S. policy towards the Middle East, towards the Arab and Muslim world, and things that could have been done much better. Barack Obama comes brand new to the presidency and makes a speech from Cairo, talks about a departure from the old, bringing in the new. But have things really changed? And I guess that's the real question I was going to ask Sam. But, of course, we have you, our listeners, who can contribute to this conversation right now and give a try to the phone. The phones do work. I think it was mostly on Sam's end that we lost him. But do call us right now at 203-336-9756. I'd like to hear some of your views on what you thought Barack Obama's speech, the importance of it. Was it a clean break from some of the kind of negative and self-defeating policies of the Bush administration that I think certainly many people in this country and many people outside of our borders truly believe mistakes were made? 203-336-9756, if you got anything to say about our speech that we rebroadcast a little bit of from Barack Obama. You know, there are many issues that the president did not certainly take head on, and some of those issues revolved around the democracy and many longtime U.S. allies, including Egypt, the place where he made the speech. And nuclear weapons, Israel's possession of nuclear weapons, was certainly another one of those issues that were not taken on head on. Let's see who this is. Hi, WPKN, you're on the air.
Hey, good evening. How are you?
Good evening.
Listen, I thought the speech was very well crafted, as is most of his speeches. And that is about the extent of my appreciation for it. I thought it was very insulting to the Muslim world, considering Egypt is one nation of people. You have Muslims from Trinidad and Tobago to Indonesia that these words didn't really resonate to. And it was very insulting for him to, you know, lecture the Muslim world on what doing when here in this country we have yet to live up to the standards of the Constitution, especially as far as so-called African Americans, that we could live to. I mean, it was just a very insulting speech. While there were a lot of parts that were good, that were reaching, I wanted to change the policies in which have been implemented over the years, but I think with so much of George Bush's right agenda, anything that comes along, we seem to just take it as a breath of fresh air, and I really don't think that we should take it as such.
All right. Well, I appreciate your comments, and I think you're right. You know, there's the Muslim world is a mosaic. It's certainly not a monolith, as you said. So I think you make an important point there, and I appreciate your call.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Have a good evening.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Hi, Pecan, you're on the air.
Yeah. I would just like to say that I think President Obama is making grave mistakes buddying up to Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, someone who is called the United States. We're just playing into his hand by trying to form an ally out of him. We're his enemy. As much as we would like to have peaceful relations, it's not going to happen, I believe, until the tenor of their attitude changes toward the U.S. and Israel. And I think it's a dark day to see our country heading down this kind of a path. I'm not saying George Bush did everything right. I just wish our president would have a stronger stand against that kind of a language that downgrades our nation and its brave soldiers and our people, instead of trying to just make them look like they're not as bad as they really are, according to my opinion.
Okay, well, I'm wondering, you know, just in terms of any kind of buddying up to Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran, I really didn't hear that in this speech, and I didn't see it in anything Barack Obama's talked about since he became president. You want to be specific? What has he said that rubs you the wrong way?
Sure. His comments about wanting to sit down and have dialogue with these folks is not going to work. And to say what he's saying in Cairo about a world with no nuclear arms, the minute the U.S. lays down its nuclear arms is the minute we played right into their hands. And I don't think you have to be too smart to see that. I think we're fools if we completely lay down our nuclear arms, because there are evil nations out there who will not lay down their nuclear arms. And so to just throw that kind of talk out there sounds good, but I think we live in a real world that's a little harder than that. And I would just like to see our president take a stronger stand. I guess that's all I'm saying.
Okay. Well, you know, I think there's a lot of caricatures of Barack Obama as this, you know, wimpy liberal, you know, who's going to apologize and give everything away. I think that's more of a caricature than the reality. I don't think he's planning to relinquish U.S. nuclear weapons anytime soon. But you know, we can have our differences of opinion. In fact, I wish he was more in line with what you're thinking than the reality. But I appreciate your sentiment. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Bye bye. And this is WPKN in Bridgeport. We're taking a few calls in the next few minutes about your views on Barack Obama and his speech in Cairo last week, where he talked about a new beginning, respect for the Muslim people, talked about how terrorism was self-defeating for Palestinians who are trying to gain statehood, also spoke out against Israeli settlements in the occupied territories. One thing he did not address head on was Iran's nuclear weapons drive that we're hearing. They're pursuing nuclear weapons, but there was really virtually nothing said by Barack Obama about Israel's purported possession of many nuclear weapons for decades now, and the whole issue of disarming the nation's region starts with Israel and ends with Israel, and certainly extends to Iran if they are, in fact, seeking to obtain nuclear weaponry. But apart from that, the tone of the speech was certainly quite different than you heard from the Bush administration in his 8 years in office. And if you've got some sentiment and ideas, pro or con, about the point made by Barack Obama in this Cairo speech, and you want to give us a call and have your 2 cents, give us a call at 203-336-9756. 203-336-9756 is the number to call here on Counterpoint, WPKN, and WPKN in Bridgeport and Montauk, New York. And WPKN, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
So one thing that never really gets brought up is the amount of aid that we give to the Middle East. Like, for example, Egypt gets billions of dollars a year from the United States just so they won't, you know, invade other Middle East countries. And so generally what's happened in the Middle East, from what I've viewed, is we have a permanent base settled in a Middle East country like Jordan, you know, places like that, or we're giving them tons of aid dollars to not, you know, I don't want to say like blow each other up, but you kind of follow what I'm saying at all?
Well, yeah, there is this kind of, well, I don't know if you would call it hush money or something. It's basically Egypt gets money, Israel gets money, and it's to buy their alliance or at least adherence to some ground rules the U.S. sets, and that may certainly not be the solution to the long-standing problems of the Middle East and the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. But it did certainly take Egypt out of the equation in terms of the consecutive wars it had with Israel for a number of years. But again, it didn't do anything to stop the long-standing problems that were the cause of those past wars in 1960s, 1973, the 1948 war at the creation of Israel. So I think you're right. It's a false peace that doesn't extend beyond the borders of Egypt.
It's almost like a paid peace, you know?
Yeah. What did you think of Obama's speech overall, though, in terms of the tone?
I actually watched it live at work, and it kind of just gave me a warm feeling. I just don't feel like, I don't know how, you know, which way your political views go, but it just felt, it was a really warm feeling that a United States president could get up and speak so articulately. And it sounded, you know, just the words that came out in that speech would not have come out of George Bush's mouth in the way they did.
Well, I would agree with you there. There's a lot of symbolism of the rhetoric used by Barack Obama here in making a break with the past policies of President George W. Bush and others that preceded him. But I guess the real test here is, are we going to move beyond the rhetoric and into action? And one of the crucial pieces of this is the settlements in Israel, the Israeli settlements in the West Bank, and There was talk there that the United States won't tolerate the expansion of these settlements, which is certainly a roadblock to peace between the Israelis and the Palestinians. And he did scold, castigate the terrorists on the Palestinian side, who he believed were not helping their cause at all. And certainly those things were true. But will the United States step up and lay down the marker in terms of Israeli settlements where we have the most influence? That's, I think, that may or may not be resolved in the coming months. But that's a key question for me.
Well, I mean, one of the ideas is to create a Palestinian state. I mean, I think that needs to be done. There needs to be a firm borderline, and I think that's the only way you can create a stabilized government within Palestine. You know, you don't have Hezbollah running around. You know, it's pretty much just like, you know, a fight for power in Palestine. There's nothing stable, especially since Yasser Arafat died. I think the United States does need to step in and create something stable, but it's there's no quick pick solution for doing that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's certainly no quick solution here, and we've seen, 50 years now, no solution at all. Well, there's a glimmer of hope here, but hopefully, you know, one of the key issues, again, for me in looking at what has stopped the United States from playing a more positive role in settling this, this 50-year dispute, is really the issue of Palestinian and the issue of Israeli expansion of the settlements. And the United States has a great deal of influence in Israel, given that we give so much aid to that country, and there are so many supporters of Israel in the United States, lobbyists and congressmen, and it's
we fund their, we provide their arms. Like our companies sell, you know, Lockheed Martin sells, you know, jets for the Israeli Air Force. I mean, our country, you know, United States and Israel are completely invested in each other. In a lot of ways, financially speaking, too. It's in our best financial interest to keep Israel as a state because they're buying from American companies as well, and they're providing jobs for American citizens.
That's true, and I think, one thing that Barack Obama said in the past, and again, it's a question whether I'll put it into action, but you don't only say nice things to your friend. You're honest with your friends when they're making mistakes and blunders that harm their own futures, and, if indeed the United States is a friend to Israel, hopefully there will be some tough talk here and more action just beyond the rhetoric when it comes to settling this long-standing dispute. So I agree with you there. There's a lot of economic interest. There's a lot of emotional interests and ties between this country and Israel, but for the sake of the future, there's got to be a departure from past U.S. policy, and I hope we're seeing the beginning of it. There's no telling whether that's really going to happen, but I thank you so much for your call.
Yeah,
made some excellent
thank you
comments.
Very much.
Bye-bye.
You have a nice day.
Thanks. And take a little detour here in what we do tonight in terms of our original plan to discuss the Obama-Egypt speech to the Muslim world with our guest communications director with the Institute for Public Accuracy, Sam Husseini. But I appreciate you, our listeners, filling in ably there and providing some diversity and viewpoints there to our loss of connection with Sam early on in this half hour. So with that said, we're going to take a quick musical break, and we'll be back with our final interview for the tonight. That would be Kevin Zeis will be here to talk about those Bush administration attorneys who wrote various opinions authorizing torture of U.S.-held detainees and a movement by many groups to hold them to account. So hold on. And stay tuned. We'll be back in just a couple minutes with that discussion. And Kevin Zeis, stay with us. This is WPKN in Bridgeport, WPKM in Montauk, New York, and my name is Scott Harris. This program is called Counterpoint. We come to you every Monday at 8 o'clock. I should just make an important program note here right now, and that is I'm going to be going out of town for a couple of weeks. So the two Mondays coming up will be anchored here at this time slot, the Counterpoint time slot, 8 to 10, by my friend and colleague here at WPKN, Ibang Udoma. He will be here. He's WPKN's news director, and will bring you some fascinating perspectives on news events and issues. I'm sure throwing some music, too. But he'll be here between 8 and 10 the next two Mondays, and I'll be returning the first, actually, it's the last Monday in June, the 29th, I will return and maybe bring back some interesting stories from where I'm going. But, thanks to Obong for filling in for me. And right now I'd like to introduce our next guest, Kevin Zeis. Kevin is the executive director of VotersForPeace.us and part of a coalition made up of some 200 organizations that have filed formal complaints targeting 12 former Bush administration attorneys for disciplinary action and disbarment for their involvement in authorizing torture of U.S.-held detainees. Kevin, thanks so much for being here tonight.
Happy to be on. Thanks for having me.
Kevin, tell our listeners just a bit about your group, Voters for Peace.
Voters for Peace .us is a group of citizens. About 200,000 have participated in our actions. 200,000 people who want to see an end to in Afghanistan and Pakistan wars, a reprioritization of the military budget so it does not have discretionary spending and does not equal all the military budgets in the world combined, and stopping future wars of aggression, which is the most serious war crime any country can commit when you attack a country that's not threatening to attack you or attacking you, or without UN permission. So we favor, you know, ending wars of aggression and getting the current wars. And we got involved in this torture issue because I'm also on the board of VelvetRevolution.us, and we decided that this was an important issue that's not being dealt with by the dealing with the Bush and Cheney administration, by the current administration, or by the Congress. And I think there's a lot of conflicts of interest that are in Washington right now. There were 40 briefings of Congress, and they seem unable to act because of fear of their own complicity, maybe. The current Attorney General, Eric Holder, when he was in the Clinton Justice Department, he approved rendition, which is taking U.S. prisoners to another country where they could be tortured. And, of course, President Obama now is not allowing the evidence of a program of torture, tens of thousands of pictures and videos, to be released, even though a court has ordered it. He's fighting that. So we don't see the country dealing with this issue, and felt like we had to start the process. And what we can do as citizens to try to apply the rule of law is to ask bar associations to take disciplinary action, disbar lawyers who use their legal license to facilitate torture. And so that's what we did. We took that first step, and we hope to, on VotersForPeace.us, you can actually support that. You can advocate for a special prosecutor, for an open investigation. We have a click and send you can write to your member of Congress. You can write to President Obama and to Eric Holder about this issue just by going to votersforpeace.us.
So, Kevin, why don't you tell us a little bit about the complaints that were sworn out here in regards to the authorization of torture that Vice President Cheney is very proud to proclaim from any broadcast outlet that will carry his voice. We'll talk about that aspect of it, too, before we say goodnight to you.
Yeah.
But kind of just walk us through exactly what the complaints are about, who is targeted, and where things go from here.
Cheney, he's interesting. He's kind of like a criminal returning to the scene of the crime, isn't he? The complaints are against 12 lawyers in the Bush White House, the Bush Department of Justice, and Department of Defense. And these lawyers were a critical part of the torture program. Without them, this program would not have occurred. There was a lot of dissension in the CIA and the FBI and DOD about torture. Many thought it was illegal. Many feared prosecution if they participated in torture. And so having this legal shield, as false as it was, having this legal shield, made this torture program go through. And there was just an article we put up today on votersforpeace.us based on emails from one of the Department of Justice lawyers who opposed torture, and how he was being pressured by David Addington, the counsel for Vice President Cheney, to produce this, to sign off on that. They were being pushed to sign off on this memo. He was a deputy attorney general. He warned the attorney general and lawyers in the Department of Justice that should not sign off on this, that it would come back to haunt them, that it was a mistake. And the reason it's a mistake is because these memoranda are false. They're not an honest analysis of the law. They totally warp and manipulate the law in order to come up with some kind of legal reasoning to justify torture. They really warp the law. Then they start by redefining torture. Rather than using the torture that's in the law, the Convention Against Torture, which Ronald Reagan signed and is the law of the United States now, as an explicit definition of torture, if you do mental or physical harm to another person in questioning them, that's torture. Doesn't require organ damage, doesn't require near death, none of those factors that the Bush-Cheney lawyers put into the definition of torture, that's not even relevant. And so they had to redefine torture in order to make this work, and that's what they did. And they should, if lawyers who use their legal license to shield and facilitate war crimes should not have a legal license. It's that simple, and that's what the complaints are about. And we've gone against the ones who wrote the memos, the ones who reviewed the memos, the attorney generals who were responsible, all three Bush attorney generals, the White House counsel, Alberto Gonzalez, who later became attorney general, David Addington, who is the vice president's counsel, and there may be more complaints. We're looking at other lawyers in the CIA, some who are still in the CIA, and some who are left the CIA but were there, as well as some of the DOJ and Department of Justice and White House lawyers. And so this is not over, and we plan to stay on this. We're going to be filing an update with some of the concerning some of the others. We're filing one tomorrow on Attorney General Gonzalez, who seemed to approve torture before these memos were even written. So as the White House counsel, so he is in, you know, his steps were even maybe get him in even deeper trouble. And that's been reported now in the media since we filed our complaints. And since we filed the complaints, well, David Petraeus has come out and said that Geneva was violated, Geneva Convention was violated during the Bush Cheney administration, as has another of the top generals in Iraq, and Jimmy Carter, the former president, has said that he wished he wanted those photos released. He wanted an investigation to see if crimes were committed, and if there were, people should be prosecuted. So he was critical of Obama. So more and more people are speaking out on this, and we need to have the grassroots support. So please visit votersforpeace.us and take action on this, or visit disbartorturelawyers.com and support these complaints.
Kevin, what's the precedent for this kind of disciplinary action or disbarment in cases of torture or abuse of prisoners relating to the federal government, or relating to federal government employees or people in the armed forces? What can you tell us about precedent here?
Well, torture, you know, is not something that has been as openly out there as it was during the Bush and Cheney years. I mean, so it's kind of a new thing. But there have been, for example, during the Watergate investigation, there were lawyers who were disbarred because of their actions in covering up those crimes. And so, you know, the legal ethics are pretty clear. You cannot use your license to facilitate crime. And your job as a lawyer is to give an honest legal opinion. And if you were giving an honest legal opinion about torture, you'd start with the definition of torture in the treaties and the law. You would explain that there are two treaties, the Convention Against Torture, the Geneva Convention, which we the United States led the effort to have passed around the world. There's two federal statutes, one against war crimes, one against torture explicitly, and the Army Field Manual prohibits any kind of improper treatment of criminals, even less than torture. You know, any kind of degrading treatment at all is against the Army Field Manual. So if any lawyer were to actually apply law clearly, they would say this is illegal. And that's what many people did say in the Department of Justice, and the memos were pushed through anyway. But they were later repealed by later lawyers in the Attorney General's office. And now Jay Bybee, and who's now a judge on the second highest court in the country in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, one of the author writers, and John Yoo, there's an Office of Professional Responsibility review of their actions within the Department of Justice, and any day now they could come out with a report recommending disbarment. And if that happens, I think that the disbarment of those two increases greatly, and I don't see why it stops there.
That's a good question. If these lawyers are disciplined or disbarred, what does your coalition think about the accountability of George W. Bush, former president, and his vice president, Dick Cheney, who apparently were very much involved in the day-to-day management of abuse and torture of detainees held at Guantanamo and elsewhere?
Well, in fact, just last week, the Washington Post reported that Dick Cheney went to some of those congressional briefings at a time when Congress was starting to question the torture techniques after the Abu Ghraib photos came out. Dick Cheney went up and really pushed the Congress to stay silent. And so he did play a role, and we know that much, and we know his lawyer was heavily involved in pushing. And our view basically is we need to do two things beyond the bar complaints. First, we need to have an honest and open investigation about what happened, and the openness is important because we need to have the country hear about it, talk about it, and decide that torture is wrong. And torture is wrong not just because it's illegal, but wrong because it's counterproductive to U.S. interests. It produces false information. It puts our soldiers at risk in multiple ways. First, they get tortured themselves. Second, the people they're fighting won't surrender because they're afraid of torture, and so they'll fight to the death. They also hurt our soldiers because you infuriate the local population. You provide a recruiting tool for our enemies, for Al-Qaeda, and you also separate the United States from our allies because our allies don't want to be involved with a war criminal country. And so for all those reasons, torture is counterproductive, plus it's illegal. And so I think an open discussion is the first thing. The second thing is we need to have an investigation by a special prosecutor who's independent of the Department of Justice and able to pursue the law and the facts, gather the facts, and apply the law. And if it goes up to the Attorney General, fine. Goes up to the Vice President, fine. The President, where it goes, it goes. Donald Rumsfeld, for example, was out there publicly talking about how the Geneva Conventions were a quaint relic of history. Well, that kind of comment is what made torture happen, and I'm sure we would find, if there was an investigation, a trail back into the Secretary of Defense's office on this issue as well. It would be interesting to see if he did anything illegal. So let the chips fall where they may, and if it leads to Nancy Pelosi, that's fine too. We need to hold people accountable so this does not happen again. War crimes like this are what destroy nations, and if we don't stop, and look at it and deal with it, it will come back again and again. We've got to say no, this is unacceptable, and people will be held responsible for it.
Kevin Zeese is our guest. He's executive director with the group VotersForPeace.us, and he's part of a coalition of groups that have filed formal complaints targeting 12 former Bush administration attorneys for disciplinary action and disbarment for their involvement in authorizing torture of U.S. held prisoners. Kevin, what does the public make of this situation vis-a-vis torture? Is there a majority of people in this country who, right along with the dictates of the Geneva Convention, reject torture? Or are there many people in this country who toe the line of Dick Cheney, that we have to do everything possible, including torture and violating human rights, to protect this country?
The country's definitely mixed on it, and there are polls in different places on it, depending on how the question is asked. And that's one reason why we need this open discussion. This truth and reconciliation process where we can bring it out in the open and hear what the facts are and debate whether or not torture was helpful or not. It's interesting, you can see Dick Cheney, you know, you mentioned him earlier, you know, coming back to the scene of the crime and wiping the fingerprints and putting out, you know, roadblocks to investigations as best as he can. You know, he's changing as the information comes out more and more. First he was saying that torture led to, stopping a terrorist attack on the United States. Well, in fact, the FBI director says the opposite, that it didn't stop anything. And now Dick Cheney, I see, is, well, it wasn't just the torture, but the interrogation it did. Well, maybe the interrogation did. In fact, there was an op-ed in the New York Times by an investigator, FBI investigator, involved in some of the high-value prisoners, and he said that they did get useful information out of them, but not by torture. Once the torture was used, the information stopped. They tortured one guy 180 times, another guy 80 times, and obviously that was beyond trying to get information. That was punishment. And one of the reports, in fact, points out that the main area I was asked about was not about preventing future attacks in the United States, but about tying Saddam to Al Qaeda. So we need, the public needs to hear more about this. We need to know what actually happened, debate the pros and cons of it, get the facts out, and make a decision as a country. Are we going to be a country that involves ourselves in those kinds of war crimes, or are we not? And if we're not, don't we have to hold people accountable for putting out legal memos that were just designed for the purpose of facilitating war crimes? And I think we need to have that discussion and debate.
There have been mixed signals coming from various sectors of Washington, D.C. about the need for a truth commission. Vermont Senator Pat Leahy, a Democrat, early on talked about a truth commission. We've had other people come out and advocate for a prosecutor, a special prosecutor, to be appointed to look into who, from the president on down, George Bush and Dick Cheney on down to these lawyers, to see if anybody is susceptible to prosecution for violation of international treaties and U.S. domestic law. And there's a whole range of different confusing things coming out of the White House. Barack Obama himself talks about this being a nation of laws and not men. And he says that Eric Holder should be the one to determine whether a special prosecutor is appointed. But Barack Obama's given mixed signals, too, where he feels that we have to look forward and not backward. And basically his own way of saying we should move beyond this. Where do you think things are headed in Washington, D.C.? Is there a momentum toward one thing or the other? Do you see a movement towards a truth commission or a prosecutor at this point?
I think that it's momentum depends on what the people do. If the people remain silent and do nothing, then I think this will be brushed under the rug as best as they can. You know, it may come back up again when some of these pictures get released. I think the courts will order that release, and that will be a game-changing moment when tens of thousands of photos showing that the program of torture was widespread and routine, that literally thousands and thousands of people were tortured by the United States. When that gets shown, that will have an impact on the discussion and move things forward. I think hiding it is one part of the strategy of wiping this under the rug so we can forget about it. But the people need to act. That's why at votersforpeace.us, we have a place where you can, you know, send letters easily, just in a few minutes, to your members of Congress, to your senators, to the White House, and to the Attorney General, urging them to take action on this. And we really need to keep a drumbeat up of public pressure. If there's no public pressure, then it's not going to happen, because it's not a fun thing to hold hearings holding other elected officials accountable and appointed officials accountable. That's not a fun process. It's going to be a painful process, but a necessary process, and it's going to take the public demanding it for it to happen. If we don't demand it, I worry it'll just be forgotten. And so we see these mixed signals in Washington. We see, you know, General McChrystal appointed to be the general in charge of Afghanistan by President Obama, despite the fact that he was the commander of Court Nema, an area that was used for torturing people in Iraq, just outside of Baghdad. In fact, two people died in that camp at the hands of people at his command, and five officers under his command were found guilty of prisoner abuse. And there are reports that General McChrystal played a role in blocking the Red Cross from coming to see prisoners being held there, and promised that. That was promised to his soldiers by people in his command, according to press reports. And now he has been made the head of Afghanistan as the top general there, and the Congress did not even ask questions about this, despite these reports. That shows a real sickness in our body politic, a toxicity that has to be removed, and it's an action. It's going to be removed by citizens demanding action. It's going to be removed by applying the rule of law to the facts and letting the rule of law determine things. Obama is right when he says we are a nation of laws, and he's also one who's told us to hold him accountable when he does not live up to his own standards. I think it's time to hold President Obama accountable to those words, that this is a nation ruled by law and not one where any person, including the president, is above the law. They all need to be held accountable, and that's the reality of it.
Yeah, the saying is daylight is the best disinfectant, and I think
That's right. It's
not sweeping it under the rug. It's not looking forward and not backward. Pat Leahy, the senator who wanted the Truth Commission, talked about you can't know where you're going until you know where you've been, something like that.
Senator Leahy is right on target on that, and I really hope he goes forward with the Truth Commission. I'm sure he's getting pressure not to. They have a lot on their plate in the Judiciary Committee. They have the Sotomayor nomination to work on, and so they have a lot of issues to deal with, but this is such an important issue that it cannot be ignored. It's just going to get bigger and more dangerous if it is, and if those pictures come out and show some of the things that have been reported, rapes of men and women, sexual abuse of women, rapes with objects of men and women, and deaths of people. Human Rights Watch reports 98 people have died in U.S. custody in Iraq and Afghanistan, and that there are many other people who are just missing. We don't know where they are. This has to come out, and it's going to come out, and if Obama is playing the role of hiding it, it's not going to be good for him. He'll be an accessory after the fact. I'd much rather have President Obama on the side of the law, and we should tell him that. We should tell President Obama, be on the side of upholding the law, not on the side of helping people who have violated the law in the most serious ways possible, for any head of state to be involved in war crimes, you know, or any leaders in the government, Department of Defense, CIA, whatever they were, to be involved in war crimes is something that needs to be examined. It cannot be something that lets go so a future president can do the same thing with the knowledge that there's an unwritten rule that you will not be prosecuted by the next president.
Kevin Zeese, when Barack Obama talks about juggling all these multiple crises that he has confronted since taking office in January, the incredibly deep economic crisis that this country and the world faces, the two wars that the United States is engaged in, as well as new crises with North Korea, concern about Iran obtaining nuclear weapons, on and on, what's your strongest argument that you'd make to Barack Obama if you had his ear to say, hey, look, this torture thing has got to be on top of your agenda. It can't be something that's ancillary or secondary or tertiary.
Well, you know, I've already made a lot of the arguments. What I'd add to what I've already said would be that, you know, in his Cairo speech, he started to talk about a new beginning and the requirement of telling the truth. Well, hiding the truth is not telling the truth. And you can't have a new beginning as long as these injustices go unresponded to. And I think the president knows that. And I think that, more importantly, the Arab world knows it. The Persian world knows it. The Muslim world knows it, we're not going to be able to have relationships with these countries that are meaningful and productive unless we clean up this mess. And the war that we're fighting, the wars that we're fighting in Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Iraq, will not go well if we do not face up to this and acknowledge the mistake of the past. Show is not what the United States is going to be like in the future. Show that we'll hold people accountable for these kinds of crimes, because these are very serious crimes. If he wants to see those wars go smoothly, if he wants to see a new beginning, if he wants a relationship based on trust, he's got to tell those truths. I appreciate that President Obama told the truth in the speech about, you know, a coup d'etat the United States did in 1953 against Mohammad Mossadegh in Iran, elected leader of the Iranian people, who were replaced with a brutal Shah, and the Shah's rule, which was so brutal, led to this, I really think, is a key fertilizer of this Islamic extremism, Muslim extremism. And I'm glad he admitted that mistake, but that's 1953. Let's admit the mistakes of 2003, 2004, of more recent history, where we admit these mistakes, deal with the mistakes, we will have strong relationships, we'll be able to end these wars more quickly, our troops will be safer, and we will have a relationship with these countries that's built on mutual trust and respect, as opposed to one that's based on covering up and deceit. And so I think it's in our interest, and it's in the national interest, it's in the security, in national security interest of the United States, to face up to this issue and deal with it.
I think you're right. 56 years is a long time to wait for a United States president to admit what's standing in front of the world, the fact that the United States was instrumental in the coup in Iran in 1953, as well as multiple other coups around the world in that era and since then. But, Kevin, I wanted to ask you this. If United States citizens were tortured by another nation and a new president came to power and refused to investigate or prosecute those who were responsible for the torture and death of U.S. citizens, you know there would be outrage in this country and a condemnation of a leader who tried to sweep the torture and violation of international law under the rug. So you got to wonder what Barack Obama is thinking. Unless he feels there is a double standard at work here, that the United States is exceptional, is an exception, and we always hear
that's really well put. I think that it's so important to try to stand in the shoes of the other people. And what do you think the Iraqis think? Why do you think that shoe was thrown at President Bush? They, you know, this torture before Abu Ghraib came out. I've been very involved in the anti-war issue and followed the Iraq war very closely, and, you know, got reports from Iraqis, living in Baghdad and other parts of the country. And, you know, so they were well aware of this tour before it came out in Abu Ghraib. And, this was not something this was something talked about. And there's no question that the Bagram Air Force Base in Afghanistan is talked about in Afghanistan. People are aware of this. People are aware of our actions, and our non-response to this reality, our denial of the reality that these people have felt, and, you know, we've arrested thousands and thousands and thousands of people in these countries, and they've almost, abuse was the norm rather than the exception, and so everyone knows it, and so it's a reality, and to deny the reality and not deal with the reality creates a festering wound that will ensure that we have bad relations with these countries for a long time.
Well, Kevin, it's good of you to spend time with us. I appreciate, I know many of our listeners appreciate your efforts here in trying to hold to account the attorneys that authorized torture in the name of our country against our own laws and international laws. Give out the website address again so our listeners can get in touch and support it or question it or find out more about it at least.
Yes, I appreciate that, and I really want people to get active and get involved. We want them to, we need their help to make this happen. We cannot do it alone. The two websites I'll give you, one is the group I'm director of, is VotersForPeace.us. At VotersForPeace.us, we have a daily news summary of all the news around the world that you'll find helpful. But in addition to that, we are working on the torture issue, and you can send a letter to your Congress members, you can, your senators, your the president and the attorney general, and help us to push this issue of torture. At the other website is DisbarTortureLawyers.com. DisbarTortureLawyers.com is a website where you can sign on to these complaints and show your support for them and also take action when time is appropriate. We'll let you know how you can do that. So DisbarTortureLawyers.com and VotersForPeace.us, and I really appreciate the opportunity to be on the air. Thanks a lot.
Hey, Kevin, just one quick note here before I say goodnight. I've run across a day of demonstrations in Washington, D.C. and across the United States called Torture Accountability Action Day. The date is June 25th.
That's right.
And
the main event will be in Washington, D.C., and we'll probably be announcing some additional complaints against lawyers that week as well and participating in that event. So it would be great if people came down and participated.
And I believe it's the website for that, in case our listeners are interested. It's tortureaccountability.web.com, and I think that's where you can start. It's a funky address there, but it's tortureaccountability.web.com. And Kevin, thanks again for being here with us. We'll check in with you soon.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Kevin Zeis, Executive Director of VotersForPeace.us, talking about the complaints, the formal legal complaints against Bush administration lawyers who authorized torture. That's it for us tonight. John Laser and maybe JF will be here in just a few moments to take over. Thank you for all your calls and contributions to this station over the weekend and tonight and through the rest of the week, I hope. This is an 8-day fund drive, and we need all hands on deck to make this a success. So if you haven't thrown in a pledge yet, we hope you will. Go to our website, WPKN.org. You can make a secure online contribution there as well. Find out more about our program schedule. Find out how to volunteer here or get involved. That's WPKN.org. And lastly, I'll let you know some of the interviews you hear on this show on Counterpoint can be heard on our Between the Lines radio news magazine. And there's always audio archives there. It's btlonline.org. As for a Counterpoint website in the works, I'll let you know when we get it done. But you can go to btlonline.org to get our weekly program summaries, or interview transcripts, and podcasts. And with that said, I thank you all for listening. We're going to be gone for the next 2 weeks. My fill-in here will be WPKN's news director, Ibang Udoma, who will be sitting in the next two Monday evenings between 8 and 10. I'll be returning on Monday, June 29th. So have a good couple of weeks in June. We'll be back with some exciting programming here next week with Ibang, and in 3 weeks when I return. So stay tuned and help support WPKN through the rest of this week. Mark it on your calendar. Don't forget. Thanks for listening. This is WPKN in Bridgeport at 89.5 FM and WPKM in Montauk at 88.7 FM. This station can be contacted at 203-331-9756. If you want to talk to myself or anybody here, the snail mail address is WPKN Radio, 244 University Avenue, Bridgeport, Connecticut, 06604. We always like to hear what you like, what you don't like, and maybe your suggestions, or maybe you want to contribute an idea to us. So get in touch and contribute often. Thanks for listening, and we're going to have John Laser coming up next.
We'll get rid of the dictator, rebuild your country, make sure all your kids go to school. We'll clean up the cities, get the sewage plants running, institute parliamentary rule. We'll bring you autonomy, senators and judges, and a shiny new blue banner. We'll bring you pride and prosperity, food in your bellies, and every home a phone, fax, and scanner. After we torture our prisoners, we'll bring you decades of peace, spiritual release, free religious expression. You can say what you want in the papers you run. We'll never force a confession after we torture our prisoners. The oil will flow just where it should go, across the desert and into the sea. You'll thank your God and the CIA that finally you are free. After we torture our prayers, you'll all be safe with us to protect you and keep you out of harm's way. You'll thank creation and your liberation from the dark into a new day. After we torture our prisoners, you can all jump for joy, each girl and boy, and look boldly into the distance. You'll be so happy for all that we've done for such invaluable assistance. After we torture our prisoners, you won't have to worry about tyrants and bullies now that you have sovereignty. You can hold your head high, kiss Saddam goodbye, say hello to democracy. After we torture our prisoners, after we torture our prisoners.
And you're listening to WPKN 89.5 FM in Bridgeport, Connecticut, WPKM 88.7 FM in Montauk, and on the internet, www.wpkn.org. My name is John Laser. I will be with you here until 2 a.m. this morning. Interesting show this evening. Just got this DVD in today, and hopefully the producer will be calling me in a few minutes, and we'll get him on the air too, but I want to play this for you while we're waiting. So let me see if I can get this queued up over here. It's a little bit of a documentary. You can find, I'll tell you where you can find this after I get done playing it. And bear with me as I figure out my technical difficulties here. Hold on. Let's see. My PC up here. Okay, while we're waiting, let's see. We will go up. Give me, I'll get to this in a minute.
Saw it in a photo, said all I need to know. It's an image that has followed me wherever I may go. When I look into your eyes, I can only guess at where you've been. Looking at the skyline of Berlin. The buildings are all shattered, as in a silent. The streets are all just rubble. The year is 1944. I guess I just don't understand this world we live in. As I'm looking at the skyline of Berlin, when I look into your face, I can hear the dying cries, the sadness of the world reflected in your eyes. Picture of a city flattened like a tin, looking at the skyline of Berlin. About the Blitz and all those good people gone. You could claim you're fighting evil. ask which side I'm on. But all I see is horror, a war only death would win. When I'm looking at the skyline of Berlin, democracy rising, balanced on a wire, liberation, you can smell it in the air.